Okay, we're just going to go right into this because this is...
Oh, wait, hold on. Well, but like...
Are your school days out of sight when you took English, art, and math? What's your favorite Fahrenheit? How sour are the grapes of wrath? Do you need a challenger or disgusting Salinger? Do you love the written word? What happened to the mockingbird? Our show is just beginning, so find a place to sit. These questions will be on the test. It's time for Sophomore Lit.
Hi. Oh. Hey. Say hi, guys.
Oh, that was hi. We're supposed to say hi? I thought you were just saying hi to your listeners.
Right. This is a podcast.
Okay.
About literature, sort of. This is our annual Thanksgiving podcast. And like the rest of you all, the McCoy family finds itself spread into a wide diaspora. So I'm recording here from Boston. And brothers, you want to introduce yourself?
Rob, you go first. You're the oldest one.
Sure. I'm Rob McCoy, broadcasting from Bloomington, Illinois, near Normal, Illinois.
Do you want to give your address there?
And I'm Dan McCoy, broadcasting from Brooklyn, New York.
La-dee-da.
You said like expected I was lying.
Okay, hi, guys. So, like I said, this is a podcast about literature, and this is our annual Thanksgiving podcast. And normally, we would do this after the big family meal, and we would all be down in my basement, huddled around a single microphone. This time, we are doing this over Zoom, so I apologize for the peculiarities in audio. But you know, it's 2020. What you gonna do?
Oh, is that what we're going with these days?
Okay,
because that'll cover up a number of my mistakes.
I didn't want to call out Rob for not having a good microphone.
Well, I think the listeners will not.
It's all my fault
for that.
My six listeners have grown to demand quality from these Thanksgiving episodes. So happy Thanksgiving, everyone. What are your plans, guys?
I am making a large meal, even though it'll just be the two of us here. It'll be much more food than we need. I'm not making a full turkey. I got some turkey legs that I'm making a confit preparation of. And I did a lot of prep work today so I can cook tomorrow.
We may or may not defrost a turkey in time to overfeed two people.
And because my kids are vegetarian, you guys dodged the bullet and won't be having a vegetarian Thanksgiving this year. So congratulations. We are doing this time, as is our tradition on Thanksgiving, we pick out a little slice of Americana, and this time we are doing Joyce Kilmer's 1914 Trees. All my life I have known the opening stanza of this poem and nothing else from this poem. Did you guys ever have to do this for like declamation or anything?
No. I did read it aloud today because Audrey was wondering what it was, and I'm like, well, it's 12 lines, I'll just tell you. And I will say that I think it plays better when spoken than when read, honestly. Somehow it reads more sing-songy than if you speak it.
Yeah. I read it silently at the office.
Were either of you looking at a tree when you were reading this?
No. I was looking at my phone that had the words of the poem on it.
Were you at least thinking about a tree?
I'll be honest, John. I almost immediately, this poem lost me. And so I wasn't trying to ponder trees that much as diagnose the things that I thought were wrong with the poem. But
Joyce Kilmer was very very popular in his day, to the extent that I live like a mile away from a public school called Joyce Kilmer School here in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. And I was looking on the Joyce Kilmer School's website to try and figure out what the connection was, because Kilmer came from New Jersey. And I think he had some of his career in New York. I don't think he ever actually lived in Boston. And I could not find any reason why the school was named after Joyce Kilmer. So anyone who knows, you know, don't tweet me.
Mm-hmm. And Joyce Kilmer, much like Val Kilmer, has a name that could be traditionally feminine, but is not in this case. That's my factoid.
If you dutifully read the Wikipedia page on Joyce Kilmer, as I do for all of these podcasts, you find out that Joyce was actually his middle name. His first name was what, like Alfred or something? Alfred Joyce Kilmer, and he was named after two Episcopal priests, one who was named Alfred and the other whose last name was Joyce. So there's that.
So this poem, John.
Why?
Yeah, what's the...
This poem is arguably one of the most famous American poems there is, or at least the opening lines. I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. Joyce Kilmer was one of the last great sentimental lyric poets in America. And he was coming along writing this just as T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound were just blowing everyone's minds, man. So he was sort of the last of the Victorians, although by this time it was Edwardian, and it was also America. So the trees poem here was an enormously popular poem, and it was used for many, many years in declamation in school. So that's why, because I thought, you know, let's re-examine this thing.
I imagine the fact that it is 12 lines long, rhymes, and as a sort of a devotional poem, made it very popular with schools.
It also excuses ever reading poetry again.
Here's my problem with poetry in general, usually. I either don't want the poetry to mess around with me too much. I just want it to tell me what it means. Or I get mad that it's too simple and, like, reveals its meaning immediately. I either want, like, just like something like that's narrative with beautiful language, or something where the there's evocative imagery, but I feel no need to, like.
Okay, Goldilocks. So what poem is just right for you?
I don't know. I remember liking some Yeats, okay. But here's this poem. First off, the first two lines, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. So right off the bat, he's, you know, bashing his own stuff, poetry. I get it. I mean, like, if you showed me a poem and a tree, I would go for the tree. But that's a matter of personal taste. I'm sure there's people out there who are like, oh, that poem is...
I would go for the tree as well. No surprise with my love of nature. But I found it striking that he tells you that trees are better than poetry, or at least more lovely. And then has almost no description of a tree in the poem. It's, you know, the most generic tree possible, but he has two descriptions of breast.
Yeah.
Upon whose bosom snow has lain, yeah, and a tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast. Now, yeah. I would argue that the breast is not what's flowing, but what comes out of the breast would be the flowing part, number one. Number two, this feels kind of like weirdly pagan for such a religious Christian poem.
Right. It also doesn't seem to really describe how trees grow. I get what he's saying, but in this case, I guess the mouth is the roots of the tree.
Yes.
I feel like that's wrong. I think the mouth should be up there, like Wizard of Oz style. The mouth should just be there, and they should be cackling at you as they go by or something.
Like the kite-eating tree?
Yeah, like a kite-eating tree.
You would think the head would be on the top, not planted in the ground, but unless it's an ostrich tree.
Yeah, in terms of not telling us a lot about trees, I'll draw your attention to the penultimate stanza. Upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Now, this intimately lives with rain, I'm not really sure what it's trying to get across. I mean, anything outside gets a lot of rain. If it's just saying that trees need it to live, I'll give you a newsflash. Living things all need water. So,
well, trees can't run away from the water, but it's nothing different than any other plant. Again, very generic tree.
What's the bosom here that snow has lain? If in this snow piles up on the branches of trees, is that the tree's bosom here?
They're the arms, though. The leafy arms to prey. So I think the branches are arms, but the rest seems to be all bosom.
But where are the breasts on a tree?
And the robins that are in her hair. A nest of robins in her hair.
A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair. You know, it's optional.
Yeah.
And
another type of bird.
The mouth is the roots. The hair is the branches, but also the arms are the branches. And somewhere yet to be determined, there are also breasts on this tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I get Robert's point, though, that definitely if an alien came down to Earth and wanted to know what a tree was, this is probably one of the least useful pieces of information you could have given them. Like just handing them this poem wouldn't help. It feels like such a basic, uninteresting sentiment that, nature's better than poems, and you know, praise be to God for it. I guess is the very little of interest is being said here, and also poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. Maybe it's just your poetry that's the problem.
When I read this and read that. Kilmer was very Catholic, although he was from Episcopalian roots. I thought he pales in comparison to J.R.R. Tolkien, whose poetry is not the best, I would not say, as much as I love Tolkien. But he was another Catholic writer who was very sentimental at times, who was also very in love with nature and trees in particular. But he had a sense of what was particular about a tree. And this is a sentiment that nature is great and lovely and comes from God, but I don't have a sense why Kilmer actually loves it. He says it's better than poetry, and I take his word for it, but I don't have a sense why he has that feeling.
So it's not the best of poems. I mean, I guess it's charming because here's the thing. It's a populist poem. It takes the point of view that poets are highfalutin. They are out there to bamboozle you, to dazzle you with their metaphors, to confuse you with their allusions, to write long, dense poems like The Wasteland that nobody really understands. And here comes a guy saying, poetry is basically worthless. Let's go look at a tree.
I can understand that.
Yeah, and Kilmer was a devoted Catholic, and a lot of his other poems were more devotional. You know, you can read other poems by Kilmer online. You can look them up. And I find that other poems by Kilmer, while they all rhyme and they all have pretty heavy meter, at least they vary the meter a lot. His other most famous poem is a poem called Rouge Bouquet, which was written about soldiers having died from artillery fire in France. And he wrote that while he was a serviceman in France during World War I. And that one has a lot more interesting metrical changes, and lines have internal rhymes. And it's a little more complicated, even though it is just as devotional and just as sentimental as this poem.
We only read what was on the syllabus.
Well, you know, I want to give Kilmer his due because he has been a popular poet by virtue of this one poem, just like what's his name who wrote Casey at the Bat, which was what we did that last year, I think.
Yeah, but that one had a punchline at the end.
And that was a great poem.
So how would you improve this poem?
I don't know, John. I find myself pulled back in every year like a character in The Godfather to this. And I have to have opinions on poetry. It's not my thing. Yeah, like this sort of very, I don't know. It feels like it is written to be in like a child's devotional book or something.
I think it suffers from this kind of analysis. I mean, it's a sweet little sentiment that is light and airy, and it's, you know, a childlike faith. If it's not, you know, in a Sunday school lesson and it's, you know, torn apart, it evaporates.
Well, maybe that's Kilmer's point, is not only are poets fools, but critics are fools too. And don't we feel ashamed?
Mm-hmm. I do.
What would you suggest people read instead of this poem for Thanksgiving?
I'm currently in the middle of reading multiple books. I was reading a book, a biography of Charles Dickens on my Kindle that I got from the library and is now expired. I don't know whether I'm going to re-get it just because I was going very slowly. But it was good.
So everybody find a biography of Charles Dickens and read it.
Get a little golden field guide to trees. And
Yeah. I read a book on drawing. I'm reading our uncle's book. I'm
like, oh, right. Yeah. Everybody, listen. Listen, if you want to have the greatest experience reading a book, our uncle, our maternal uncle, Tom Cox, wrote a book called Moving On, which is the story of his life starting as a young child in Indiana during the Depression. It is the most bonkers, amazing book you can ever read.
And our mother forbade me to read it. So it's a censored book.
Mm-hmm. If you're angry at too many thes in your books, this is the one for you.
Okay. Are we running out of things to say here?
I ran out 10 minutes ago.
I'll have something to say in a year or two.
Next time I'll try and find a bit of Americana that maybe has a little bit more meat on it. I don't know what that will be. I do hope everyone is staying safe, and it's a good time to Zoom your family and not to be in person with your family. You know, when you do, you can discuss poems like Joyce Kilmer's Trees. Do you want to plug anything, guys?
I have a podcast called The Flophouse. It's about movies. I have a Twitter feed. It's at Dan K. McCoy that my co-host keeps making fun of. But then I got a ruling from Judge John Hodgman that he couldn't make fun of it anymore. That's about it.
I've got a law firm. We sue people. Check us out.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.